podcast listeners from Medical Education. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor-in-chief of the journal, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by Martin Pusick, who is adjunct assistant professor in clinical pediatrics at Columbia University in New York, as well as assistant professor of clinical emergency medicine at NYU, New York University, where he's also the head of student assessment. And I wanted to talk with Martin today because he has a paper coming out in the March issue of Medical Education entitled "The Prevalence of Abnormals in an Image Bank Affects the Learning of Radiograph Interpretation." Thanks, Martin, first of all, for taking the time to chat with me and for the interesting paper.
Oh, my pleasure.
The paper reminds me of something that people I've often heard speak about but haven't seen a lot of research into, which is the fairly simple issue that students come in and they want to focus on the pathologies. They see medicine as being about identifying what's wrong and trying to learn how to diagnose and treat those things. And your work seems to actually experimentally raise the question of how big an influence does it have if we systematically vary the proportion of cases that students see that are indicative of some pathology or indicate normal health, for lack of a better phrase. What led you down this road in the first place?
Well, what we found was that the majority of image banks online are all cherry-picked collections of abnormals. So people get a case that they find remarkable and then put it into their collection, and it ends up being like butterfly collection, a whole swath of x-rays that are somehow special. When you're learning from a collection like that, the question that the student is being asked is, what's the abnormality? Kind of ahead of time know that there's an abnormality there, and so it becomes a hunt for where the abnormality is on the image. And so what we thought was that that's not really what goes on when you're working clinically. When you're working clinically, the first question is there an abnormality? So that the whole time you're considering the x-ray, the possibility that this x-ray is normal is oftentimes more likely than the fact that there's actually an abnormality there. So ultimately, we wanted to design an image bank that more faithfully represents what happens clinically. So we knew that the image bank had to have some proportion of normals in order to create that kind of equipoise in the learner's mind. So a natural question was, what proportion of normals do you need? And hence the motivation behind this study.
Right. In fairly typical radiographic interpretation teaching, as you've experienced and delivered it, is the norm to try to set a default for normality or abnormality, or is there some sort of foundational place that you try to get the students aligned with?
So I don't think there's a normal default. A number of psychological studies trying to detect a signal amongst noise have been done, and there the default ends up being at 50%. And so if you set it up that there's 50% signals and 50% noise, it makes the metrics work well and leaves the person in enough uncertainty to be able to bring out their decision making. In some of them, you tell the person up front that it's a 50% abnormal kind of setup, and in other ones, you don't tell them at all and give them no baseline information so that they're unbiased when they're considering the signal in front of them. So to answer your question, I don't think that there's a well-established baseline rate that you should do other than this experimental idea. The other thing that we a bit naively went into this with was that, well, we'll set the baseline rate at what it is in real life. So this data bank, Kathy Boudis in Toronto, collected information on everybody who consecutively came into her emergency department at the Hospital for Sick Children. Mm-hmm. So this is based on a consecutive series. We discarded x-rays that were obviously fractured, and x-rays that had pointers on them showing you the fracture, or x-rays that had cast on them, things that were not educationally helpful. But otherwise, everything was in. And on that case series, we found that the prevalence rate for fractures was 38%. So we grounded our study in one group roughly reflecting that proportion of abnormality, and then the other two groups having successively more in the way of abnormalities.
Right. Okay. So just for the sake of people who haven't seen the paper yet, this was an experimental design where you've randomized students to one of three conditions where you deliberately changed the proportion of cases that were abnormal from 30% to 50% to 70%. Correct?
Exactly.
Any other methodological details that you think people need to understand in order to appreciate the study?
The other thing was we worked hard to make the three sets comparable from a difficulty standpoint, so that we had prior data on a bigger set of x-rays where we knew the approximate difficulties of each of the cases. And so that where in the 30% group, they were 30% abnormals and 70% normals, the normals were of a difficulty that was comparable to the abnormals that we saw in the 70% group.
How difficult is that? Again, just for the sake of people who don't have particular expertise in radiographic interpretation, is the normal typically easier to identify, or was it fairly straightforward to get a similar difficulty across those two?
We had a big enough set that we were able to match an abnormality of difficulty X and finding a normal of difficulty X. And so we're able to do it. On average, the normals are easier than the abnormals, but there's quite a bit of overlap between the two sets, and there can be some very, very difficult normals. And especially in this setup, they're pediatric ankle radiographs, and so kids are growing and they have growth centers, and so that clouds what a normal looks like. So it can be difficult to distinguish a normal from an abnormal because there are things on the x-ray that can look abnormal.
Right. Okay. Sounds like a fairly straightforward design with some very clear care and rigor put into designing the materials. So when you altered the prevalence of abnormal in the way that you describe, what happened?
Well, we wondered two things. We wondered whether or not one of these three conditions would favor the actual learning that happened. And so the setup was that you got randomized to 30, 50, or 70%. And what that looked like was you did 50 cases with feedback. And so that you would declare whether or not you thought it was abnormal or normal. And if you thought it was abnormal, you had to put a little yellow dot on the region of abnormality and then click submit. And upon clicking submit, you would get instantaneous feedback in the form of yes, you're right, or no, you're wrong. And then on the x-ray itself would be highlighted any regions of abnormality, and we would pop up the radiologist's report. So in doing the 50 cases, you would learn. You would maybe get the first few wrong, but then start to get the idea based on the feedback, and you would progressively get better and better at reading these particular kinds of films. And after doing the 50 cases, everybody did the same post-test. And so our question was, on this post-test, was one group going to be advantaged?
So just before you get to that, not sure I asked, but people presumably want to know what level these learners were. Were radiographs brand new to them?
No, these are all residents, mainly in pediatric residency programs in Toronto, in New York, in Minnesota.
Okay.
And with a smattering of emergency medicine residents in there and a few pediatric emergency medicine fellows, people who completed their residency and were now subspecializing in emergency medicine.
Okay, so these are people who have seen some set of radiographs in the past, and you didn't have to do a lot of foundational teaching to help them appreciate what a fracture looks like, for example. Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, we did. So in leading into the film, they did a short PowerPoint that taught them what these were about.
And okay.
So it is a group that has prior knowledge in this area. And we didn't study first-year residents. They're all second and third years, and they all will have done emergency medicine rotations, and they presumably would have confronted this situation in the past.
Great. Sorry to interrupt your train of thought there. Maybe I'll now take you back to what actually happened.
Okay, so we randomized them three groups, 30, 50, 70%. And so that the first thing we looked at was their overall accuracy. So in looking at the post-test had 20 items on it. So what were their scores on the 20 items? And what we found was there was no difference. So all three groups got roughly the same score in terms of their simple accuracy across the three. But what was interesting was that they traded off sensitivity against specificity in very, very different ways. So the group that saw 30% normal cases was very good with the normal cases that they saw on the post-test, and that translated into a high specificity, but their sensitivity was relatively low. And for the 70% abnormal group, the group that had learned on the abnormals, they were better in terms of their sensitivity, but relatively poor in comparison in terms of their specificity. And then the 50% group was somewhere in between these two.
So just to paraphrase that, make sure everyone understood, the performance seemed to align quite naturally with the database that they saw going in then. They were better at identifying abnormals if they had a large portion of abnormals and better at identifying normals if they had a large portion of normals. Is that accurate?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so it stands to reason what you'd seen in learning these things is what you were good at when you finished up. And so again, the overall accuracy was the same, but the ones you were getting right, if you learned on normals, the ones you were getting right were the normals. And
it does stand to reason, but it stands out because, again, I just haven't seen anybody ask the question and demonstrate that actually this matters. I think most of the time we just go by intuition, or as you said, do the butterfly collection and put that forward because they're cases that may be seen as more interesting or give people more to talk about. I could see an argument for the 50 cases that you presented either helping people learn the base rates, the rate at which these abnormal cases tend to show up, or even just creating the mental database for the diagnostician so that they wind up more likely to see similar cases when they're actually being tested, that compared to the training cases, sort of a pattern recognition type model. Have you any thoughts as to why you think this pattern is being observed, or maybe it's both those things or something else? And more importantly, the reason I'm asking is, given that you seem to be able to push around sensitivity and specificity, do you see one as being more important than the other in these training contexts?
Well, the fact that you can push these things around is important. If, for example, you're teaching somebody about cervical spine fractures, in which missing even one case it can be tragic, then I think that what you would want to do is you would want to train somebody with a large number of abnormals and have them almost tuned or calibrated to pick up abnormals and set things up so that their sensitivity specificity trade-off is set that way. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, to use the ankle fracture example, when you miss an ankle fracture, you're usually missing a very, very mild ankle fracture. So that there are very few, if any, ankle fractures wherein some hidden fracture, if you miss it, will lead to deleterious consequences other than, obviously, discomfort for the patient, leaving the emergency department and being discovered when the pain persists. And so not wanting to splint people who don't have fractures through that expense and crutches and being off and that sort of thing. So you may set your sensitivity specificity trade-off in a different way. But again, this comes into value judgment. But the fact that we can tilt people towards sensitivity or tilt people towards specificity is an interesting educational aspect to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Very clear implications. I suppose just more generally outlines and illustrates the importance of being deliberate in that decision making rather than just trusting that all will work out in the end. There's obviously much more in the paper, and I don't want to try to get you to give away the entire story because I do encourage people to read the paper. It's a very clear study, as I said, and quite well done. And so I'll just end there by congratulating you on the effort. I've been speaking with Martin Pusick, who is the first author on a paper coming out in the March issue 2012 of Medical Education, entitled Prevalence of Abnormals in an Image Bank Affects the Learning of Radiograph Interpretation. Thanks again, Martin, and I look forward to seeing what comes next.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.